And this is for poverty, social development, poverty, development, and so on. And then a very important formula. We're very grateful and grateful to come here for your families. And we also want to acknowledge the presence of other esteemed guests on this occasion. This child, as you know, was founded by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. This child has presence. Can you turn up your mobile phone if you don't mind? For the very second moment. This child, as you know, has branches in almost every corner of the globe. This child has more than 500 branches in every corner of the globe. And we are trying to help society as much as we can. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada was a great scholar, and he translated nearly 100 texts in the English language. And these texts today are available in almost 70 international languages. In almost every language in the world now, you have Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, etc. So, what this fellow is trying to do is educate society to higher standards. We saw just now, was a film showing only one aspect of ISKCON activities. This film that we saw was only focusing on our midday meal activities in India. But this is just one of the many activities that we execute. We have a very active food for life program in almost every part of the world. Recently, the Deputy Prime Minister of Hungary was visiting a Delhi temple. They showed a slide also. And he was telling me that one of the things we like from you about you people is you also take care of the elderly people in our society. That is the Food for Life program. So this Food for Life program has begun in many parts of the world. So our topic today is, as we said, the role of leaders in shaping an ideal society. And I would like to open our discussion by reading a verse from a very ancient book of knowledge called the Bhagavad Gita. There are many ancient books of knowledge, but if you trace down the history, you'll find that Bhagavad Gita is, without doubt, the oldest book of knowledge on the planet. And basically, it's a book of knowledge. Someone may say, is that a religious text? Our answer is, it's not a religious text, but it's a book of knowledge. Someone may say, is the Bhagavad Gita strictly for Hindus? Our response would be, no. It's a book of knowledge meant for the entire society, meant for the entire humanity. I was once flying a few years ago from New York to Moscow on an airport flight. And there was a very respected individual sitting next to me on the plane. As we flew, we began to talk. And I discovered that he was the head of the philosophy department of St. Petersburg University in Russia. St. Petersburg is the number two city in Russia. And he said, I teach the Bhagavad Gita to my students. I said, what is it in the Bhagavad Gita that makes you teach the Bhagavad Gita to your students? And he said, the Bhagavad Gita answers all your questions. It has educational knowledge. So Bhagavad Gita actually is an educational book that enlightens us on almost every area that we seek to know. We live in a society that is heavily stressed out. Am I right? Are the stress levels increasing or decreasing? Increasing rapidly. And we have a solution that is reading the Bhagavad Gita. So, in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna makes the following statement, which is very appropriate to the title of our talk, which is the role of leaders in shaping an ideal society. In chapter 3, text 21, Krishna says, whichever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standard he sets, by exemplary act, all the world follows. So, when we talk about leaders of society, we don't mean just the political leaders. You know, generally, when we hear someone may say, president of the country, or the king of the country, or the prime minister of the country. We have to recognize that we're all leaders in some way. For example, parents have children. The children look upon the parents as their leaders, isn't it? A child closely follows the mother and father, and the child works on mentality based on the training he gets from the mother and father. Then we enter the educational system. We start on the pre-nursery, nursery, school, and then in school our teachers become our leaders or models, am I right? So, when we use the word leader in our talk today, we're talking about leaders at various levels of society. Beginning with parents, then you have educationalists, and then you have other leaders of society, and then ultimately you have religious leaders, and then you have political leaders. They all have a great role to play if you want to have an ideal society. What is an ideal society? And is today's society ideal? If you were to talk to people around the world, you will see that today's society is not an ideal society. We're trying to establish an ideal society by manipulation and so on, but we're not succeeding. For example, you can see all over the world, everything evil has increased rapidly. So I was given some statistics for your country by Acharya Ratna today. And even in your country, the suicide rate, the rate of drug abuse, the rate of crime has increased tremendously, am I right? If we look globally, all the evil factors are greatly on the increase. In Japan, in the last 10 years, the suicide rate has doubled. And this has doubled more or less in most developed countries of the world also. Sweden and Norway have the highest per capita income, but they also have the highest suicide rate and attempted suicide rate. So, why is our society not ideal? First, we should identify why our society is not ideal, and then we can go to the next stage, what is an ideal society? Our society is not ideal today, it's not exemplary today, because we lack good leadership at all levels. We have leaders at all levels who lack character, determination, education, morality, and as a result, their behavior filters down on the juniors. Like in the statement we just read, Krishna said, whatever great men do, others will fall. For children, how are most children brought up? They say in the Western society, the tube is the guardian of the children, not the parents. In the sense that the parents are very socializing, and the children are left to the care of television. And they watch programs on television, and they get similar habits. There was a study done in England few years ago, the two group of children, these were youngsters. One had heavy exposure to TV, and the other had very minor exposure to TV. And the study showed that those who had heavy exposure to TV grew up as criminals, grew up with bad habits. And those who had less exposure to TV were saved from developing a demoniac culture. So there is no doubt. When parents fail in their responsibility, children grow up with bad habits. When educators fail in their responsibility, the children develop only lopsided, materialistic education. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5th canto, we get major words of wisdom from a great personality called Rishabhdev. Rishabhdev was the emperor of the whole planet, and at the same time, a very conscientious father. He had 100 sons, and he gave all of them clear-cut guidance on the goal of life. And Lord Rishabhdev explained in the 5th canto that one should not become a father or a mother till he can guide his dependents on the path back to Godhead. In other words, if you are a father and mother, you create progeny, your business is not just to educate them and get them married, but your business is also to tell them, son, daughter, you must have character. You must follow the laws of God. Doesn't matter whether you belong to Christianity, Christian faith, Hindu faith, Muslim faith, Jewish faith, Sikh faith, that doesn't matter. In every faith and religion, there are certain instructions given in the scriptures. And if you follow these instructions sincerely, rigidly, then you grow up with character. So what has happened today is a total collapse of the value system around the world. And because the value system has collapsed, we see that the society is gradually deteriorating. So children don't need any education about the high value of life. I see in India, the rich parents are very keen to send their children abroad. In fact, as some of you may know, the universities in America, Europe, and Australia, to a great degree have been retained through the students from India and China. And the students from India and China, the universities would go broke. So when they had money, they wanted to send their children abroad for the best of education. But unfortunately, you don't understand the importance of character building. So, parents who are the stage one leaders of society, they know they're not aware, they're not discharging their duties, and hence, they're not proving to be ideal leaders either. Then, as a child grows up, he enters the educational system. In your country, Mauritius, I must say, you have a good educational system. I've been told that education is free all the way in schools and also in colleges. And it's nice to see that the more children are going to school. So as we enter the educational system, we should not only get material education, but we should also get spiritual education side by side. The ancient book of knowledge called Sri Isha. And then in this ancient book of knowledge it is said, one must cultivate spiritual knowledge and material knowledge side by side. If you just have material knowledge and no exposure to spiritual knowledge, material knowledge alone cannot satisfy man's need to find a peace of mind or a happiness. So we have so many educational institutions. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada was once lecturing at a very famous engineering institute in America. one of the most famous in the world. And in the audience were many learned personalities, deans, professors, and students. So His Holiness opened His lecture with a question to the audience. He said in His big view of the University of the United States of America, is there any department that tells me what happens after death? And everyone was stunned by that question. So he learned so many different branches of science. We learned that the University in that pride themselves in covering every topic that can be taught on the planet. But nobody discusses what happens after death, am I right? So because we don't understand, we're not exposed to spiritual knowledge, as a result, we develop a loose character. There was, thousands of years ago, a great sage called Prahlad Maharaj. He was just a young child, and he had a great fortune of receiving spiritual knowledge when he was in the womb of his mother from a great sage called Narada. So Prahlad Maharaj was studying in an environment in which there were children of other rich parents. And Prahlad Maharaj took it upon himself to educate these others for the higher value of life. Prahlad Maharaj said, Kamana Achatraya. One must cultivate spiritual knowledge from the age of five. And why? Because the human form of life is very rare. In how many schools and colleges is a child ever taught human form of life is very rare? Almost nowhere. We are just taught how to make money. Am I right? I was recently with my ENT doctor in Delhi. And he's a very famous doctor. And he has a son who loves to enter medical. So I just casually asked him, what branch of medicine is your son going to specialize in? He said, I'm going to make him an eye surgeon. I said, why an eye surgeon? That's where all the money's going to be in the future. Because people are so addicted to computers, and as a result, their eyes are getting infected, and that's where the maximum scope is going to be for making money. So, this doctor was honest in saying he's going to make his son into an eye specialist because that's where he saw the future to be in money. But that's what we're taught. Education today, and the Honorable Education Minister would know better than me, is being used as a means just to make money, isn't it? They refer to that educational, vocational training, etc., whichever offers them the brightest prospect. But there is another aspect of education, and that is the need for spiritual education, for education into higher value of life. We in Islam have invented a new name for this, and that is called value-added education. Education that adds value to your life. So now, in many universities and schools around the world, especially in India, we are focusing very heavily on value-added education. We feel that the children are the future leaders of society. And if these children are taught about the higher values of life, if they're given value-added education, then they will grow up to be individuals of character. Someone may say, ours is a secular country. I think Mauritius is also a secular country, like India. And so in a secular society, we can't promote anyone religion. No problem. Give them a choice. Give them a choice. They can either choose the message of the Bhagavad Gita, choose the message of the Bible, choose the message of the Quran. But give them value-added education. And if you give them value-added education, your children will grow up with character. they will grow up with some goal in life. Today we find that students are so corrupted. At a young age, they get exposed to liquor. At a young age, they get exposed to drug abuse. Drug dealers thrive, prosper, and do business with school children. I've been told that the drug dealers, they have agents near all the schools, etc. So these young children are getting exposed to liquor, tobacco. Tobacco is something very common. Brown sugar and so on is very common. And what's also happening now? A high suicide rate with children. Because they get all these bad habits and free sex is so common that we had recently an American devotee whose daughter was studying in Delhi University. And she told her father, "Daddy, I don't see any difference between Delhi and America. Things are as bad here as that in America." So the point is that the children don't get this value-added education. They grow with all bad habits. And the bottom line of the bad habits is focus on lust, anger, greed, envy, hatred, and all this contributes to the turmoil in society. So if you look at the society today, the society all over the world is in a turmoil. It's in a material turmoil, social turmoil, educational turmoil, and on top of all this now, financial turmoil. You know that? Financially, the global markets are collapsing. Financially, the global currencies are collapsing. You know that, right? The euro is collapsing, all the currencies around the world are collapsing. And the unemployment rate is so high. Someone told me today that in Mauritius the unemployment rate is 10%. But you don't have to feel bad. In other parts of the world it's about 5%. In Europe, in Greece, in Spain, in many parts of Europe, the unemployment rate is 50%. So 10% in Mauritius is pretty good. So the point they're making is they're making all these plans to have a successful society. But now gradually they say the bubble is bursting. That's what even the leading economists are talking. Then you have the results of global warming, global climatic changes. All over the world you see that the ice glaciers around the world are melting, and the forecast of scientists is very pessimistic. The scientists are also now acknowledging that the effects of global climate changes are going to come a lot sooner than they thought. And when we have sinful equilibrium in society, mature nature doesn't cooperate. We have to recognize that mature nature works under the direction of the Lord. Mature nature is not independent of the Lord, and mature nature is subordinate to the Lord. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Maya Kshina Prakriti Sri Sacharya." This mature energy is working in the right direction. So mature energy means what? Means the ingredients that we get for our survival. For example, an essential ingredient for our survival is water, isn't it? Now, how does water come? Water comes from rainfall. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, food rains come from rainfall. Rainfall comes when we fall into the laws of God. And when we don't follow the laws of God, mature nature controls supplies. Thousands of years ago, there was a king called King Vena. He was godless, atheistic, proud, agnostic. He stopped all types of sacrifices in society. And as a result, all the necessities of life were withheld. The oceans began to turn dry, the clouds were not pouring, the rain, and as a result, there was no actual production of life. People were suffering and suffering. Then came his son, Prithu, as the emperor, who recognized the mistakes that King Rayana had done. He told the citizens to glorify the Supreme Lord, and they glorify the Lord, the necessities of life also were provided. So, if you have value-added education, you know that ultimately everything comes from God. America was founded on very strong religious beliefs. That's why the founding fathers of America, even the currency that they had, they write in God we trust. So, trusting in God means also trust living by God's instruction. So what we need as a society is a total reform of our educational system. Total reform would mean that we add on this value-added education, which would make the parents understand their duties, the education understand their duties, and then they themselves would also have character. We have to practice what we preach, and if we have character, others will follow. So, this is needed in society. If the leaders are exemplary, then the others will also follow. And if the leaders are not exemplary, then what will happen? Then nobody will follow, and you will have a society like presently, where everything evil is on the increase, and by and large, people are getting more and more degraded. Day by day we see character level collapsing, we see everything evil on the increase, the crime rate has gone up so much, and there is no mature solution. We often think in the mature world, now in the next election I'm going to vote for a different party that will solve the problem. Just like in France they had an election, the one-term president will upset another the new president. So in America they have Democrats and Republicans, in England they have Conservatives and Labour, and in every part of the world they have different parties, and they think we just vote for another party is going to change society. But actually we see nothing really changes. Because there is a fundamental problem with what is perceived to be the solution. And people think changing personality is the solution. But the real solution is changing the educational system. Unless we cultivate spiritual knowledge from a young age, unless we also live by spiritual principles, we cannot have a peaceful society. There's so many wars going on all over the world. There's so much killing. The biggest industry in the world today is the armament industry. Why? Because there's so many wars going on all over the world, and people in the countries don't have money to feed their population, but they have money for armaments. So we have a wrong mission in life today. And it's trying its best in a small way to correct this imbalance in society. And this imbalance in society can be corrected through various schemes that we have. Like I said, we have the value-added education program. Then we also have a program where we regularly go to universities around the world, where we give courses on Bhagavad Gita, where we give courses on higher value of life. And we also have a program of corporate preaching, where our individuals are well educated, they go to corporations, because one very common thing in corporate life is stress management. One very common disease all over the world today is stress. And the stress levels are increasing very, very rapidly all over the world. And some of you think that money buys happiness, but that's not a fact. few years ago, there was a survey done in America, and people were asked a question, what is it that you want in life that money cannot buy? And money can virtually buy everything, isn't it? If you have money, you can also buy power and so on. So the question was, what is it that you want in life that money cannot buy? And you know what the number one answer was? Peace of mind. Peace of mind cannot be bought with wealth, etc. And because we are in total ignorance about what's the goal of life, total ignorance about the basic philosophy of life. In the Bhagavad Gita second chapter, Krishna explains the difference between the body and the soul. And it explains how the soul is eternal and the body is perishable. This point of it that is explained in the second chapter is also supported in the Bible, where it says, what should I do if I gain the whole world and suffer the loss of the eternal soul? So we don't understand that the soul is eternal. We think that now we have this body and we are heavily influenced by the last time we breathe, then we hate it. Then we try and satisfy the body and we try and amass as much as we can just to make the body happy. But if we understood that the soul is eternal, and this body that I have is just a temporary companion, Bhagavad Gita says that just like we discard our old clothes and take our new clothes, the soul also leaves one body and takes on another body. And the next question is, what type of body does it take? And the answer is, that is determined by our actions. And in 1969, or 1970, there was an article written by a leading Canadian doctor. This doctor had seen people die for 32 years, and he said that I am convinced that there is something in the body, and when that something leaves the body is pronounced dead. So what he was saying is, we see people dying all the time, the doctors see people dying all the time, but there's something in that body, and when that something leaves the body is pronounced dead. So this article was sent to Divine Grace Ace Bhakti Goswami Prabhupada. Swamiji used to regularly correspond on different topics for different individuals around the world. So Prabhupada wrote to him and said, I'm very happy that at least you're acknowledging there's something in the body, and when that something leaves the body is pronounced dead. This doctor had said, now we are going to investigate what is that something that which leaves the body and where is it located. So then Prabhupada told and quoted different verses from the scriptures how the soul can never be seen. And in the end, the doctor acknowledged it was a long exchange. It's published in a book called Science of Self-Realization. At the end of the discussion, the scientists acknowledged what the Vedas had to offer is far superior to what modern science can ever discover. So modern science can take it to a point, but we need the wisdom of the Lord and the sages to guide us in developing a good character. So